Hi everybody, this is Martin Zender coming to you from Queens, New York. I am at my son's apartment. I'm here for 3 days. So you'll be hearing from me from New York City for the next couple days. I was gonna bring you a video from Times Square. I don't know if I'm gonna be able to work that out, but that'd be fun if I could, we'll see. But I need to talk to you today about how to handle demons, because there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. I guess first you have to acknowledge that there are demons in the world. Demons are like the counterpart of angels. Angels are the lowest form of spiritual life. They're like the messenger boys. They're the coffee getters. They take your mail to the post office, you know, make nail appointments for you, things like that. On the other side, the demons, they're the minions of the sovereignties, authorities, and world mites, who themselves are the minions of Satan. They will screw up your coffee. They will send your mail to the wrong address, and they will break all your nails instead of making them nice. So, yeah, they're wreckers. But you and I have an advantage that most people don't have, and that is we understand the sovereignty of God. We understand that all is of God. This is another beautiful byproduct of understanding that human beings don't have a free will. Here he goes again. Yeah, but this is really helpful, because if you think you have a free will, then you can potentially screw up your life with God not wanting you to. God like doesn't want you to screw up your life. And somebody calls him and they say, "Hey God, there's some guy down there. He just screwed up his life." He screwed up his life. How could he? I set him up so perfectly, and that guy went and screwed up his life. Thanks for the report. And then God's scrambling around. No. But if you believe that, then you also believe that the demons, the little minions of Satan, have their free realm. Why not? Every being has a free will, and God's just throwing up his hands and hopes everybody does what he wants them to do. He has no other choice. He gave away his freedom, and he'll never get it back. Once you give it away, you can't get it back. Think about it. If God gives away his will to do whatever he wants, and he gives it to not to one being or two beings, but to billions of human beings, as well as billions of celestial beings, he's never getting it back. He's done for. But refreshingly, this is not the case. So this is really going to help you when it comes to handling demons. We realize that everything serves God. God is sovereign over Satan, and if he's sovereign over Satan, then he's sovereign over the demons. It's no problem. So they can only do what he wants them to do. And the way that you give demons the victory is you pay attention to their world and you take them seriously. It's like, "Oh no, it's a demon. I must go to my church." And then you go to your church and they cast out the demon. The demons are like sitting back on a lounge chair. They're loving this because there's no bad press for the demons. They love attention. They thrive on attention. And they hate it when you ignore them. And that's what we do. We totally ignore them. We don't give a crap about them. I can talk about them with no fear. They can go fuck themselves, because God is the ruler over them, and he's the ruler over me. It could be that a demon enters my life for some reason or another, like Paul. Let's go to Paul right now. Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 7, he was taken to the third heaven, as you recall. Wherefore also, lest I should be lifted up by the transcendence of the revelations, there was given to me a splinter in the flesh, a messenger of Satan, that he may be buffeting me, lest I may be lifted up. For this I entreat Satan three times. No, doesn't say that. For this I entreat the Lord three times, that it should withdraw from me. So Paul immediately takes his eyes away from the demon, which that ticks off the demons big time. The demons are like, "Look what we're doing to your life." And they're going, "Yeah, yeah." And then you totally look away from them. And the demons start to panic. It's like, "Hey, over here. I'm over here." No, I go to God. You go directly to God. Job did this too, as we're going to see. So Paul turns to the Lord, and because he doesn't like this thing that's happening. And I'm all for, you know, if something bad happens in your life, you could say, "Lord, is this a demon buffeting me? If so, I'd like to be rid of it." and ask God to get rid of it. Nothing wrong with that. Like, this is irritating me. Please deliver me. But, you know, not as my will, but your will be done. So that's the ultimate. You want God's will to be done. So Paul entreats the Lord, and the Lord says to Paul, quote, "Sufficient for you is my grace, for my power in infirmity is being perfected." So whatever messenger of Satan came into Paul's life, it came there from God. That's why Paul addressed God and not the messenger of Satan. You notice what Paul didn't do. He didn't go to the Corinthian ecclesia and say to them, please join hands, please surround me with joined hands, and I need you to pray the devil out of me. I need you to rebuke Satan, rebuke the devil. Paul, none of this crap. Again, the demons love that kind of attention. They love it. And they have Christians jumping through so many hoops attacking demons. And again, for a demon, there's no bad press. There's no bad press. So they absolutely love it. Christians play into their hands. I don't, and you don't. I don't address them one time. Paul says, wherefore, oh, did I finish what Jesus said to Paul? Sufficient for you is my grace. My power in infirmity is being perfected. With the greatest relish then will I be glorying in my infirmities. That takes it to the next level. Paul then relished his infirmity. So he actually thanks, indirectly, he thanks Christ for the demon. I say demon, Paul calls it a messenger of Satan. I'll just call it a demon. Paul ends up thanking Christ for it. That really ticks the demons off. They can't believe it. It just sucks their power right out, because then you're just going along with your life. It's like, if I have to deal with this, I have to deal with this. Praise to God, glory be to God. And they're like, no, me, praise to me, glory be to me. Why don't you do with me what the churches do? They yell at me, they curse at me, they pay attention to me. Every second they're paying attention to me and cursing me and trying to drive me out. They're not paying attention to Christ, which is my goal in the first place. So I got all these people doing my behest, working my will. And they think they're fighting me, but they're actually indulging me. We're not going to make this mistake, friends. Oh no, we're not going to make this mistake. So Paul then says, he delights in infirmities and outrages, in necessities and persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For whenever I may be weak, then I am powerful. So poor Satan, everything he does turns against him. He says, I'm going to make Paul weak. So he sends a messenger of Satan, indirectly, God sends it directly. So this messenger of Satan comes in and it says, we're going to weaken Paul. And Paul says, I glory in my weakness, for then Christ's power tabernacles over me. And the demons are going, what is it with this Paul? And they will eventually leave Paul alone, because he's just no fun. He's just no fun. He's not getting Pentecostal on him and casting him out. It's like, what are we going to do with this Apostle Paul? He's driving us crazy. He don't pay no attention to us. Yeah. I love it when that happens. Satan hates it. Christ loves it, because you're giving Christ credit. Back to God and Christ and Job. Job was afflicted. Remember, read the book of Job. Satan actually appears with the other sons of God in God's presence. Satan appears before God's presence. And Satan, newsflash Christian religion, Satan only does what God tells him to do. Somebody says, well, Satan made a suggestion. Yeah, well, God put it in his heart. Satan doesn't even realize that. Satan thinks he has a free will, probably. What do Christians and Satan have in common? They all think they have a free will. So they all appear before God. Satan says, oh yeah, well, Job's just honoring you because, you know, he hasn't made, you put a hedge around him, everything goes well for that guy. Things start going against him, he'll curse you to his face. And God's thinking to him, God tells his son on the side, he goes, psst, Satan thinks Job is going to curse me to my face if things go bad for him. And the son just kind of rolls his eyes like, yeah, right. Like, we know Job. Yeah, they definitely know Job. So they know this isn't going to happen. And they know that Job is going to be this epic book of the Bible that proves that God is more powerful than Satan. Satan doesn't know that, though, but God and Christ are going, yeah, let's let him go ahead and do this, because This is going to be awesome. We're going to make a whole book of the Bible out of it that's going to put Satan in its in his place. And we're going to bless Job with more afterwards. And Job's going to come to an understanding of evil, that it humbles one, and then God's power tabernacles over him, and it's going to benefit millions of people. Of course, he said this very quietly. It's going to benefit millions of people. Don't tell Satan that, though. Okay, shh, psst, yeah. Okay, Satan, yeah, go ahead. We're going to let you go ahead and do this. And Satan's probably going, hey, they want a bunch of idiots. They're going to let me do this. But they're all along going, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Satan's going to screw himself again, which he does every time. Always screws himself. It always turns out working against him rather than for him. So that's how you handle demons. Oh, and it's just like how we handle the flesh, our most agitating problem. You handle the flesh by ignoring it. Romans chapter 6, Paul says, crucify the flesh. Or he says that somewhere. Read all of Paul's letters, you'll find it. Crucify the flesh with its passions and lusts. Makes you think that you're supposed to go in there and kill them. Ah, but Paul didn't say kill your passions and lusts. He said crucify them. You crucify. How did a crucified person die? A crucified person was starved of the necessary elements needed for survival. Water, air, food. They couldn't get down and go to the cafeteria for a meal. So they were starved. And so when you crucify your passions and lusts, for one thing, you can't crucify a passion unless it exists. Yeah, so Paul's not telling you how to keep from having passions, how to keep from doing bad things. He's telling you once you have a passion, once it's expressed, let's say you do a bad thing, then what do? You crucify it. You ignore it. You put it to death. You don't put it to death by stabbing it with a knife. Ooh, you passion. Ooh, ooh, ooh. That just gives it more power, just like yelling at Satan. You ignore it. You crucify it. You give it, you starve it of what it needs. And what it needs is your attention, whether your attention required to fight it, to fix it, or to indulge it. Doesn't matter. Sin loves the attention, just like Satan loves the attention. Ignore both of them, and you'll be flying high in the sky of God's revelation.